Chris Doering, SEC Network. He joins us right now to talk about everything going into the Southeastern Conference. But for us, that means Alabama and Florida this week. Chris, my man, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Good to be on with you, especially with this week at hand. I know it's one, at least here in Gainesville, that folks have been looking for a long time. And to finally have it here is certainly exciting.
If I ask you the Florida offense, the way it looks right now, I'm sure you've gotten this question 100 times this week already. Which quarterback looks like it gives Florida the best chance to win? And I would accept both of them in your answer.
Well, I mean, here's the bigger question is what level of availability is Anthony Richardson going to have this week? I mean, we all saw that 80-yard run that culminated with a grabbing of the hamstring. And anybody that's ever pulled a hamstring before knows exactly what they saw when he reached back behind him and knows exactly what that feels like. So we're not talking about Tom Brady with a pull hamstring. We're talking about an explosive Lamar Thomas type player, a Lamar Jackson type player that is running around, that is explosive, that as soon as you try to put your foot in the ground and push off, it's going to grab that hamstring and potentially hurt it worse. So I'm not convinced that he's able to play, and that's not from any information that I have from any Florida sources. That's just concern over what I saw. Now, with that being said, if he's 100% healthy, then I think you see a lot of the same rotation that you saw in the first 2 weeks. Nice complement of having Emory Jones as kind of the main guy and Anthony Richardson coming in certain situations to provide a little different look for the defenses. But I think one of the most difficult things that college coaches now have to navigate is managing rosters in general, but managing quarterbacks specifically. Because we all know with the transfer portal, I mean, Kelly Bryant a few years ago saw what is possible and what guys will do. Derek King kind of the same way. Like, guys will leave in the middle of the season if you don't manage things properly. And we know with guys that run the football as much as Emory Jones and Anthony Richardson do, inevitably you're going to need both of those quarterbacks. So it is a balancing act. It's a great problem to have, but nonetheless, I'm sure it creates a little bit of anxiety for Dan Mullen.
Chris, away from the quarterbacks, and this might be difficult to answer because it was Florida Atlantic and South Florida, but what grade would you give the entirety of the Florida team outside of the quarterback position through two games?
I wanted to see heading into the season from Florida were better play in the run game, offensive line being able to open more holes and get more push up front, which they've done, over 700 yards rushing combined in the first 2 weeks of the season, and then a defensive line that could penetrate, be disruptive against the run, be able to rush the passer with just their front four, and they've done that as well. I mean, they had, I believe, 6 sacks in the first week, a bunch of tackles for loss last week against USF. The problem that I have in evaluating Florida as a whole is I just don't know how good those two teams are to really test Florida and see if what we're seeing is legitimate or if that's something that's a little bit of fool's gold. So right now I feel pretty good about where Florida is. I think questions in addition to line of scrimmage play were, you know, how do you replace the production at the receiver spot after losing Kadarius Toney and Kyle Pitts, 2 first-round draft picks? That has answered very well with Jacob Copeland's production and Xavier Henderson's production. Some other guys stepping up like Trent Whittemore and Jamarcus Weston. So they look good at the pass catcher positions. Secondary looks like there's a lot of talent to complement Kyrie Elam. So right now I feel pretty good about it. But much like I look at Auburn, I just really don't know if what I'm seeing is legitimate or it has more to do with the competition they've played so far.
Chris Doering is with us on the Pepsi Hotline. The former Gator wide receiver is now on ESPN, the SEC Network, SiriusXM as well. You can follow him on Twitter, at Chris Doering, on Instagram, at CDoring28. Todd Grantham, I think, can be described. I don't know if stubborn is a good way of describing him. Do you think, based on what happened when these two teams met in Atlanta last year, where Florida could get almost no stops, do you think he changes his approach in this game at all just based on that outcome last year?
No disrespect here, but can you name a defense that did get a stop against Alabama last year?
Oddly, Missouri to start the season, and that was about it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's about it, but it was a tough task last year. It'll be a tough task this year. I do have some questions. Again, you know, how much of what we saw against Miami in the first half is legitimate as well? I mean, obviously the competition against the Hurricanes is better than probably FAU and USF was for Florida, but, you know, subsequently watching them struggle with Appalachian State on Saturday leads me to believe that maybe Miami's not quite as good either. I still think this is a dangerous position for Alabama coming into a hostile environment like this. Bryce Young, although he looked very mature in that first start against Miami, it was kind of Alabama's home away from home in Atlanta. It'll be a much different reception from Florida's faithful on Saturday at 3:30. So I do think it's going to be a little bit more challenging, but inevitably, I think if you're going to beat Alabama, it's not so much about your defense as it is about your offense. And the two teams that probably played Alabama the toughest last year were Florida in the SEC championship game and Ole Miss, two teams that had the ability to score with Alabama for the most part. So I go back to what I talked about LSU in 2019, what I talked about Alabama in 2020, and probably what I project Alabama to be in 2021 is a team that puts pressure not only on the opposing defense to get stops, but on the opposing offenses to be able to hold serve and score not field goals every time you touch the ball, but score touchdowns to match the production they're going to have on offense.
Away from the Alabama-Florida game, around the SEC, Texas A&M is not looking the part right now of a playoff contender. Are you worried about the Aggies?
I am very worried about the Aggies, although I was not necessarily as high on the Aggies as a lot of people were in the offseason. I think now, you know, it looks a little bit embarrassing to me that A&M was calling Alabama out as much as they were in the offseason. I don't think they're ready for a lot of the teams in the SEC. They certainly didn't look ready for Colorado for the majority of that game on Saturday. The things that I was not buying in the offseason that everybody was trying to sell me were, first and foremost, hey, we lose four starters from that offensive line that was so good last year, but it's not going to hurt us at all. We're not going to miss a beat. We've recruited really well at the position. Those guys are going to step in, and the offense is going to maintain that MO of being physical and running the football downhill. Well, that didn't happen on Saturday. They rushed for less than 100 yards against Colorado. They had some protection issues in the passing game, so I'm concerned about that. But the other thing I look at, too, I know, you know, Calzada stepping in and trying to get his feet underneath him was a little bit of a challenge, and certainly he had his moments of being errant throwing the football. But I look at the tape, and what Colorado decided to do, they played single high safety, they got an extra safety down in the box to run support, and they played a lot of press coverage against the wide receivers on the outside, and those guys could not separate at all. I mean, so you can look at Calzada, maybe some issues he had throwing the football, but the receivers did not make it easy on them. Those guys have got to find a way to separate more, because if you go back and look at the box score, the top receivers for A&M on Saturday were two running backs and a tight end. Those guys were the ones that were catching the majority of the passes, particularly late in the game. There was nobody at the wide receiver spot that was stepping up. So that's a concern for me as well.
One of the more intriguing teams to me now in the SEC is Kentucky. Liam Cohen coming in, calling these plays. They've got a quarterback that's got a ton of confidence in Levis. You've got weapons in Rodriguez and Robinson. You know they're always going to play really good defense under Stoops. It was a tremendous game on Saturday night against Missouri. Kentucky becomes a really dangerous team now. Do you agree?
I love Kentucky. I love this team for the last few years. I've been leading the bandwagon for a while in terms of what Coach Stoops was building there, and it's finally all coming together. They got that final piece that they needed, which was a complement to the great run game that they've had. They were miserable last year throwing the football. Coach Stoops made a very difficult personal decision to let his good friend Eddie Grant go in favor of going out and getting somebody that could teach and call the passing game a little bit better to keep up with the rest of the offenses in the conference. And that's exactly what we saw, you know, in week one against ULM. A lot of the play action passes on first down, taking shots down the field. Wandale Robinson has been an absolute blessing for them in terms of coming to this league and the production he's had through 2 weeks. But the interesting thing to me, guys, was when it was nut cutting time, so to speak, you know, they went back to who they are, and that's running the football. 52 rushes against Missouri to only 18 passes. You're not going to be able to take that physical run presence out of that team, and I love the way that they just imposed their will on Missouri, particularly, you know, as the game wore on. Now, they still have some issues. Turning the football over right before halftime, you know, could have been a game killer for them. Giving up 9 of 12 on third downs could have been a killer for them. But different from what we've seen traditionally, and a lot of Kentucky football fans will tell you, they are always waiting for that next shoe to drop, like inevitably something bad is going to happen that's going to prevent them from winning the big game. They tried to shoot themselves in the foot a number of times, but in the end they found a way to win the football game, and I think that speaks to the growth and what Coach Stoops calls expanded capacity for what this program is about now, and they're continuing, in my opinion, to be a team that's on an upward trajectory.
Hey, by the way, as a father of a 16-year-old, we've We've lost the phrase nut cutting time. I said that the other day to him, and he had no idea what I was talking
about. It's a great phrase. Like I've been saying nut cutting a lot, which I don't know if I can say that on the television. I haven't said it there yet, but I also said emasculating, which I think is a very descriptive term, which we saw a couple of teams do. I thought Arkansas emasculated Texas the other day, and much of the same with Kentucky doing that to Missouri's defense.
Yeah, I would agree. I like emasculating. That's a very good word.
Feel free to use it going forward.
That is the type of education you get at the University of Florida when you're Chris Doering. At Chris Doering on Twitter, see him on the SEC Network, ESPN, and hear him on SiriusXM. Thank you, Chris. Great talking with you as always.
All right, guys. Talk to you soon.
All right. Chris Doering was on the Pepsi hotline. It obviously goes back to farming.
Homeboy had a go.
I did. I wanted to ask him one more question.
Well, we told him to keep him to 10, and we were at 12.
Okay. Yeah, so I didn't know that.
Yeah. Right. He had a meaning, I think.